Genesis 36, this is the long list of names connected with the genealogies of Esau. And about 9 times in this chapter, it's emphasized that Esau, as it says in verse 2, took his wives of the daughters of Canaan. And that, of course, is in stark contrast to how his father Isaac had waited until age 40 before getting married and had then gone to a huge amount of effort in order to take a wife not from Canaan, but from the remnants of the believing family back in Paddan Aram. And of course, the same with Jacob, who married Rachel and Leah from there, because the wives that Esau had taken were a grief of mind to his parents. So there is a big theme in the Bible of the need to marry believers. There's no doubt about that. And yet, there's also a theme that you see developed here that I think Esau comes over as the nicer guy in a secular sense compared to Jacob. Okay, he went and married Rachel and Leah, but what kind of women were they? I mean, you read those chapters about how they argued with each other about having children and gave Jacob their slave girls to sleep with so that they could claim more kids and so forth. And really, you know, Rachel is so addicted to idolatry that when they finally leave her father Laban, she steals the idols and she sits on them while Laban feels all around the tent, really trying to get into everything, really try and find these things. And she's sitting on them and says, "Oh, sorry, Dad, like I've got a period. I can't stand up. Forgive me. You won't mind, will you?" And he sort of grunts and lets her off. And of course, she's sitting on them. She's so addicted to idolatry. And she dies just before you reach Bethlehem, as if she didn't quite get to the Spirit of Christ in her life. So it's not that these women were necessarily righteous, but they were within the chosen family. I think that's the point. And so I do think that we should encourage folks to marry believers. And I would think that really that is a natural outcome. If your love of God and your love of the Lord Jesus is the greatest passion in your life, you are simply not going to want to make life together with someone who does not have that same perspective. I think that it's really a natural outcome, I would have said. But anyway, the point is that God chose Jacob, just as he chose Israel. And the founding fathers of Israel, Jacob's sons, were likewise. Not much to write home about in spiritual terms. But this is why the people of God are often weaker spiritually in terms of behavior than secular people in the world. Secular unbelievers can often act in a much nicer way than Christian believers. And why does God do this? Well, it's, I think, because he simply chooses people to work with, and he likes to choose the weak. He loves this. This is his style. This is his characteristic. It's why the tabernacle, the dwelling place of God that looks forward to his dwelling place amongst us, his people, was made of acacia wood, very weak wood, because that was his way. Weak human beings, that's how he liked to work. That can't really bear much strength, can't really bear much heavy weight, difficult to work with, easily snap, like the vine tree. Again, a symbol of Israel, Ezekiel 15 says, of what use is the vine tree? What use is vine wood? Well, not much really, let alone, Ezekiel goes on, when it's been burnt in judgment. And yet God wanted to use them. What good are dead bones in a valley? Ezekiel 37, well, with the Spirit of God, they become a great army. This is his characteristic. And so we read all these names here. Most of them have paganic idol worship kind of associations. Aholibamah in verse 2. I mean, that means tent of the high place, and a lot of them are similar. But every now and again in this list of names, you do see one that's a bit different. And in fact, the Eliphaz of the Book of Job and the Jobab you read about here would appear to be the Job of the Book of Job. And Eliphaz ends up, I think, one of the friends who's converted, I think, at the end of the book. Magdiel, beloved of God. The rest of them are all really paganic names associated, like Aholibamah, tent of the high place, with the pagan things. I think it just shows that out of the mass of humanity, walking in darkness to an eternal grave, one here and one there will be different. And this, in fact, is all of us. Even if you are raised in a believing family, this is how it is. It is a call to walk out against the wind. It is a call to be transformed, and it's that transformation that will make you different. It's not that you are better, that we are better than other people. It's that we, by grace, have been chosen. And this is why when Paul in Romans wants to, as it were, demonstrate salvation by grace, he starts talking about election or calling and predestination as if these things are the parade example of grace. The fact that God will just call a person who is going nowhere, not better than the guy next to them, but God just calls that person. This is grace. And that was you and me. And they say, ah, well, no, I was better than the guy next to me because, you see, God knew, God saw something good in me. Well, no. That's very self-congratulatory and arrogant to think that. I think so, anyway. God has chosen us by grace, and it is for us to respond in grace to that grace that he has shown to us. Well, I talked about Aholibamah, a tent of the high place, this woman whom Ezekiel married, and who was a grief of mind to his godly parents. Well, that is the term used for God's apostate people in Ezekiel. It's in Ezekiel 23, verse 4, that they were no better than Aholibamah. So their whole idea that, ah, yes, well, Esau, that was the line that wasn't chosen, and we are of Jacob, we are the chosen ones. No, you're spiritually no better. That was the point. You are being worked with by grace. And this is also an example of where the language of the rejected, the language of the unbeliever, is applied to God's people if they act like the world. So many times when you read in the prophets about the judgments that were to come upon Israel or upon Judah, they are described in terms of the judgments of Egypt. There would come locusts, for example, all over Judah, so says Joel. And he's alluding to the plague of locusts upon Egypt. And he's saying, well, yeah, you know better than Egypt. And so it is here. They were called Aholibamah in Ezekiel 23, which is one of these apostate pagan women. And the point is that if, in essence, we are no better than the world, if, in essence, our heart is in the world, is in Egypt, then we will be treated like Egypt. And so it's not that we are condemned by God, but rather that those who wish in their heart of hearts to be with the world will meet the world's judgment. And that's why, in the context of the breaking of bread in 1 Corinthians 11, Paul says we should examine ourselves, lest we be condemned with the world. So when Jesus comes back, this world will be judged. And if in our very heart of hearts, the most best thing for us, the most enjoyable thing we could imagine is going out Friday night after work with the guys from work or girls from work and drinking and partying and going on holiday with them and having a great time, if that in our heart of hearts is what we truly want, well, okay, so when the Lord comes, okay, we'll go back to the world. That's where you want it to be, is it not? And that's the choice that we make now. Rather than him condemning us, the ones who are of this world will have this world's fate. That's why, you know, come out from Babylon, lest you share in her judgment. And so it's not, as I say, that we are better than the folks in this world. It is that we have been chosen out of the world, and we are to respond to that.